Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the L.A. Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we have a special guest. Is Larry Dorman from the Austin Union. He'll be calling in between 8 tonight and 8:15.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. And he'll be calling live from
town meeting?
Yeah, from a town hall meeting by Connecticut Governor Dan Malloy. That explained his budget. But we'll be talking to Larry tonight for a short while. And let's see, we got you got Woody in the Ring tonight coming up at 9. And we got a segment with John Brennan, our environmental reporter, at 9:30. And between then and now, we got quite a lot to do.
Yeah, while we're waiting for Larry, we have all kinds of things. Every day there's all kinds of news.
All kinds of news. This one really got to get there, though, boys and girls. This one is U.S. is to use Al-Qaeda as allies in Libya. It just struck me
as humorous.
Dumbfounded, I tell you. The U.S. frustration over the Libyan war has forced Washington to consider supporting Al-Qaeda operatives and deploying ground troops in the North African country, a political analyst said. I think the U.S. forces and NATO forces are becoming frustrated in Libya, said the editor of Pan-African Newswire, Abayomi Akazwai, in Press TV interview. The U.S. has seen the futility of the air operations against the Libyan government, and this is for the simple fact that it has not been able to win any territory for the opposition forces in the eastern part of Libya, he added. That's why General Hamm, who is the new commander of the U.S. African Command, came out several days ago and said he does not rule out the deployment of ground forces in Libya.
Mm.
All right, which is, you know, I mean, why are we supposed to believe any of these people any time that they talk? We aren't. And let's see. Akawi went on to say that the American people are shocked by the fact that in Libya, the U.S. government is backing the very organization, Al-Qaeda, that has been cited as the major enemy in the so-called war on terror. This, of course, raises serious questions about the credibility and political character of the war that is being waged right now inside Libya, the analyst argued.
Libyan troops have killed thousands of civilians since the revolution against Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's regime began in mid-February. Many civilians have reportedly been killed as well since the U.S.-led coalition unleashed a major air campaign against the regime's forces on March 19th under a U.N. mandate to protect the Libyan population. Meanwhile, the U.S.-led forces have admitted to killing revolutionary forces and civilians in a fresh airstrike in eastern Libya. The Western Military Alliance, however, has refused to apologize for the deadly bombardment. Revolutionary forces have criticized the U.S.-led forces for their failure to prevent the killings of civilians by Gaddafi troops. The revolutionaries have recently threatened to plead with the United Nations Security Council to suspend the NATO mission in crisis-hit Libya if the military alliance fails to do its work properly.
Isn't that bizarre or not?
Yes.
I think so.
That's strange.
Let's see. There we go. Just look at this one for a minute. Egyptian jail for criticizing the military. Already they're starting in the great Egypt.
Uh-huh.
And it says a military court in Egypt has sentenced a blogger to 3 years in jail for what it claims as insulting the military, spreading false information, and disturbing public security. Regrettably, the Nasser City military court sentenced Makal Nabil to 3 years in prison. Nabil allegedly published evidence on the military's deceptive efforts against Egyptian protesters during the uprising that led to the Egyptian revolution in February. He was arrested on March 28th at his home in the Egyptian capital, Cairo. His arrest came following the publication of the report entitled "The Army and the People Were Never One Hand" on the military force violence against anti-government protesters.
Local and international organizations have accused the Egyptians' ruling military council of torturing anti-regime activists. Meanwhile, hundreds of protesters have remained in Cairo's Liberation Square since Friday, demanding that the ruling military council's chief step down and pave the way for the formation of a civilian government. They also want the release of political detainees, as well as a probe into corruption allegations against ousted Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak and his allies. Millions of protesters from a variety of socioeconomic and religious backgrounds demanded the overthrow of the Mubarak regime. Mubarak's family finally stepped down on February 11th as Egyptian's president and handed power over to the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces.
So they're still protesting there, and they're putting people in jail. So they got nothing for their other efforts. Nothing. Anyway. That was a sick thing. You got to see it, though. U.S. troops fire on Iraqi prisoners. God bless America. Support our troops. It shows a 2005 video of American soldiers shooting at Iraqi prisoners that was behind fences, unarmed. You know? Just unbelievable. Just shooting at them just for fun. Throwing hand grenades at them. This is going to happen here, there's no question. UK mortgages to soar and interest rates to quadruple in a year. Interest rates are set to quadruple within a year, adding more than $100 a month to a typical mortgage, £100 a month. The senior bank advisor has warned families should brace themselves for a rate rise as officials try to get to grips with soaring inflation. Sounds sad that the balance of opinion of the MPC, which sets interest rates, was shifting to favor of an increase, the first since March 2009. So
they've had different financial policies than we have.
Once it goes up there, it'll probably go up here. I don't know. They're having foreclosures everywhere. I don't know what they're trying to do.
Did the Obama White House authorize gun smuggling into Mexico? CBS News broke the story back in February. Agents of the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms appear to have aided and encouraged the illegal purchase of high-powered firearms in the United States gun shops, pushed the gun shop owners to sell the guns, and then aided the smuggling of the guns into Mexico. The Obama White House apparently channeled more than $100 million of Obama stimulus money to support the smuggling operation. A lot of money was made on this smuggling operation, and it's still unclear who authorized this apparent criminal activity and who were the recipients of this money.
Amazing, huh? Oh, that's dirtbag. Dirtbags. It's from Lubbock Online. These smuggled guns were used to kill members of the rival Mexican gang.
Of rival Mexican gang.
Apparently Mexican police and military and even U.S. agents. The excuse given by the Attorney General, Eric Holder, and his Department of Justice for this apparent criminal activity was the gun smuggling was somehow for the purpose of tracking illegal guns in Mexico. Guns are smuggled into Mexico and sold. Apparently, the serial numbers of the guns were recorded. It appears no satellite or other tracking devices were embedded in the guns. So all they do is just rub off the serial number.
Yeah.
Right, most of the guns simply disappeared into Mexico and have not been identified since. Project Gunrunner was started in 2005 in apparent bipartisan support. The initial intent of the program was to stop smuggling of guns into Mexico. Sometimes in the past few years, the nature of the program was changed. It's not clear who authorized these changes. President Obama denies that either he or Eric Holder authorized the gun smuggling for profit. Sounds like Bush, something Bush would do. But.
Keeping American weapons from getting into the hands of Mexican gangs is the goal of a program called Project Gunrunner. The critics say it is doing exactly the opposite. CBS News investigative correspondent Stacey Atkinson reports on what she found. December 14, 2010, the place, a dangerous smuggling route in Arizona not far from the border, a special tactical border squad was on patrol when gunfire broke out and Agent Brian Terry was killed. Kent, Brian's brother, said, "He's only my brother, the only brother I had. I'm lost." The assault rifles found at the murder were traced back to the U.S. to a U.S. gun shop. Where they came from and how they got there is a scandal so large, some insiders say it surpasses the shootout at Ruby Ridge and the Dudley siege at Waco, Texas. To understand why, it helps to know something about Project Gunrunner, an operation run by the ATF, the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Atkinson went on to comment about the implications of Project Gunrunner in the incident. Project Gunrunner deployed new teams of agents to the southwest border. The idea to stop the flow of weapons from the U.S. to Mexico's drug cartels. But in practice, sources tell CBS News that ATF's actions had the opposite result. They allegedly facilitated the delivery of thousands of guns into criminal hands. CBS wanted to ask ATF officials about the case, but they wouldn't agree to an interview. We were able to speak to six veteran ATF agents and executives involved. They don't want to be quoted by name for fear of retaliation. These are the allegations. In late 2009, ATF was alerted to suspicious buys at seven gun shops in the Phoenix area. Suspicious because the buyers paid cash, sometimes brought in paper bags, and they purchased classic weapons of choice used by Mexican drug traffickers, semi-automatic versions of military rifles and pistols. Sources tell CBS News several gun shops wanted to stop the questionable sales, but ATF encouraged them to continue.
James Avila was one of the suspicious buyers. ATF put him in suspect database in January 2010. For the next year, ATF watched as Avila and other suspects bought huge quantities of weapons, supposedly for personal use. They included 575 AK-47s, type of semi-automatic rifles. For personal use, 575 AKs. ATF managers allegedly made a controversial decision, although most of the weapons on the street, allowing most of the weapons on the street. The idea, they said, was to gather intelligence and see where the guns ended up. But insiders say it's a dangerous tactic called letting the guns walk. And the article goes on. It's pretty long.
You get the gist of it.
We did it again. Friggin' boobs. Boobs. And you know, it's just not boobs. It's just the way it is. You know, it's just illegal stuff that, you know, somebody's profiting from it. The White House warned Republicans on Monday that failed to raise the $14.29 trillion U.S. debt limit would spark Armageddon-like consequences for the slowly recovering U.S. economy. As a new political showdown looms over the economy following a diffused budget row, aides also said Barack Obama now regrets his vote as a senator against raising the debt ceiling in 2006, calling it a mistake. The consequences of failure to raise the debt ceiling would be Armageddon-like in terms of the economy, said White House spokesman Jay Carney. So, it's we have to raise more money. We have to raise the debt so we borrow more money.
Yeah, that's how it is.
If we only owe $14 trillion now.
Well, in the scheme of things, that's probably not much.
The consequences
of the dollar isn't worth much.
No. Congress must raise the U.S. debt limit, or the maximum amount of the Treasury is allowed to borrow, by May 16th, or see the United States default on interest payments of its debt. But the move has become embroiled in a fiercely partisan battle over the economy. Carney warned that the result of failing to raise the debt ceilings were so grave, it would be irresponsible politicians to exploit the drama for political gain.
"We don't need to play chicken with our economy by raising the debt ceiling," said Carney. Our Republicans who control the House of Representatives are demanding vast new spending cuts from Obama, over and above the $38 billion agreed to end the budget row last week in exchange for raising the debt limit. Obama, under pressure to define the economic debate a week after launching the 2012 re-election battle, is due to tackle the issue in a budget deficit that is set to reach $1.6 trillion this year in a speech on Wednesday. Administration officials say the failure to raise the debt limit could drive up interest rates, making it more difficult for Americans to borrow money at a time when home values are depressed and market-linked pension savings are down.
They also say that global confidence in the U.S. would be badly hit. And the reality is the United States is the largest economy in the world. It is looked to around the world as the anchor of the world economy and must establish through this vote its creditworthiness, said Carney. The White House also delicately navigated around a vote made by Obama in 2006 against a plan to raise the debt limit. Bush was president in protest at what he said was a lack of leadership. The president regrets that vote and thinks it was a mistake. He realizes now that raising the debt ceiling is so important to the health of this economy and the global economy that it is not a vote that even when you are protesting at administration policies you can play around with. You need to take very seriously the need to raise the debt limit so that the full faith and credit of the United States government is maintained around the globe. Carney also quoted the head of J.P. Morgan Chase as saying that anyone who failed to raise the debt limit would be crazy, and any move of that kind would have catastrophic and unpredictable results.
Mm.
So, are they going to attempt it or what? What do you think?
They'll raise it.
I think so. This one is really quite tragic, and it's affecting everybody everywhere in the whole world. And this is the radiation risks in Europe from Fukushima are no longer negligible.
The risks associated with iodine-131 contamination in Europe are no longer negligible, according to CIRAD, C-R-I-I-R-A-D, a French research body on radioactivity. Oh, we have a call.
Yeah, that's Larry.
So we'll
put Larry right on.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. So.
There you go.
Hey, good evening, Larry. You with us?
I am. Hi, Lila. Hi, Leo.
How are you doing this evening?
Good, good. I know I owe you a longer, better session, and you'll get that from me. I'm in Middletown. We're at the Malloy Town Hall, the final Dan Malloy Town Hall meeting. So, last one. So, you know, it's been pretty, it was interesting today. It was very interesting. So,
how did people receive his message?
I think overall it was pretty good. I think we had several of our members speak, and we had a Middletown Municipal employee, Linda Salafia, who spoke about the impact on the towns. We had state employees speak, and it was, you know, the crowd overall was very, very good. There were some Tea Party crazies who disrupted it, and one of them had to be hauled off by the police, but overall, the tone was good. The tone was good, and I don't agree with everything that's going on, but you know, I give him a lot of credit. Give the governor a lot of credit for standing up and facing the people in these meetings.
Yeah, but you know, I'm looking at the Malloy budget proposal right here.
Yeah,
he's asking. He wants to increase gas and diesel taxes to 28 cents a gallon. I mean, we're already at $4 a gallon as of today.
Okay.
And then he wants
my
to
radio.
No, I'll call you.
I'm sorry, Leo. Say that again.
Yeah,
okay.
We were just mentioning that on his budget proposal, he seems determined to increase gas and gasoline taxes
and diesel.
Do you think he's going to pursue that route? Because that seems to put a huge burden on the middle class and the poor.
There's a lot in his budget that does, but it was interesting tonight. A representative from the Motor Transport Association actually spoke in favor of a small increase in the diesel fuel tax. So,
really?
That's the lobbying group for the truckers. So I was, that kind of caught me by surprise. And probably what concerns me a little bit is that there are sectors in the business community who are praising the budget, and I'm just, wondering if they're praising it because it goes easier on them, actually, and transfers more of the burden to middle-class folks like you and your listeners and me. I don't know.
Yeah.
The other thing is they're looking at the 10% corporation tax surcharge, all right, expand the death tax, all right,
mm-hmm.
increase motor vehicle registration fees, increase driver's license fees, $25 driver's license renewal fee. That's on top of the $65 or whatever you got to pay now.
Look, our concern from the start has been that we need a budget that doesn't unduly penalize the middle class, that truly shares sacrifice, that's equitable, that's fair, that's balanced. And, when you talk about fees, I get what you're saying. I mean, fees are tax increases for our members like you, again, who are middle class, working class people. My concern with the governor's budget and what's going on in Washington as well, and our union's concern, is that there's a not so dirty secret going on in this country, which is that big corporations and the ultra wealthy are sitting on a ton of money. And if
right.
we don't figure out a way to raise those revenues to tax people fairly and tax those people fairly, what's going to happen to our schools? What's going to happen to our bridges? What's going to happen to our prisons? What's going to happen to our libraries? What's going to happen to our police and fire stations? All these things are at risk because we don't want to ask the ultra-wealthy and the corporations to do what's right and do their fair share, and that bothers me.
How flexible do you think Malloy is going to be? Does he seem receptive to the fact that there's an imbalance in his budget and the burden seems to be resting on the middle class and the poor?
Well, his answer has been that, everybody shares a little bit of the pain in my budget, obviously. I think we beg to differ, and, there is a legislative body that has to deal with this as well at the General Assembly. And so our members, we have our campaign for the middle class that we launched in January. We're getting thousands of people signing our electronic petition. You can find it at campaignforthemiddleclass.org. We're taking a very strong message to the legislature and to Governor Malloy that we need a balanced, fair budget that respects the working class and doesn't transfer the burden of his tax plan, his budget plan, to the middle class. How you doing?
Let me just say that some of his cuts get really down and dirty. I mean, going into pet grooming, haircuts, these are taxes.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with you guys. Our union's point is, is that we wouldn't be talking about nickel and diming people and jacking up their fees if we could have a budget that did the right thing. And that right thing is to capture the elite wealth that's been hoarded by corporations like Bank of America, which pay no income taxes in Connecticut, which has 700 of its employees on Husky. If we raise taxes ever so slightly, God forbid, on the wealthy in the state, the top 5% of income earners in Connecticut realized a $3 billion windfall, as I've mentioned to you, because of the extension of the Bush tax cut.
That's right.
To me, then we don't have – because I agree with you. Then we're not raising fees. Fees are taxes, and I get that. We've always said that. A fee is a backdoor tax. So when you tack fees on, it affects the middle class much more than it does the upper class. When you raise the sales tax, it affects – folks like you and me. When you get rid of the $500 property tax exemption, which he's proposed, the governor's proposed, it hurts ordinary working people trying to make it work for them, and barely able to do that. So we've got to fix the system in a way that we don't do that we do this fairly, and that we can avoid the stuff that you guys are absolutely right in complaining about and voicing concern about.
Well, Were the people in that Middletown meeting, could you hear emotion when they talked? Were they upset about this imbalance in this budget?
Yeah, I definitely felt like the crowd was more supportive of that position. But, you know, we're dealing with a governor and now a legislature, and we're trying to figure out how to get them to do the right thing. But it seems to me, and I've been to a bunch of these meetings, you'd have to be tone deaf not to hear the support that people have for having a tax system that's fair, you know. And that's why I appreciate what you guys do, because I know you're shouting it out from your corner of the world, too. We've just got to keep our voices raised on this.
Did you sense any flexibility in the governor's tone since this is the last meeting? I mean, he's been.
I wouldn't say that. I think he's pretty firm, but I also think that he's a very smart, an intuitive guy, and I think that if there's room, he said that there's wiggle room in his dealings with. Legislative leadership. So I'm not going to abandon any hope of trying to get done what we're trying to get done. We'll just see how this plays out. But, I think clearly people want to see some meaningful change in how we tax people so that it's done more fairly.
What would your top priority for change be in this budget? If there's one thing that the union would like to see change, what would that be? Do you have one thing?
I absolutely do. I simply would raise taxes. I would implement a millionaire's tax on adjusted gross income of $1 million and above. I would have a surtax, an income surtax, to help compensate for the fact that our state lost $3 billion in revenues, or $5 billion, because of the windfall people got from the extension of the Bush tax cuts. And I think we need to close the corporate tax loopholes. We have corporate welfare, and that's just another dirty secret in this state. So we got to raise taxes on the wealthy, close the loopholes for the corporations. Today's news clips that I sent out, I read that the former Aetna CEO who got out of there last year, got out of Dodge, made $72 million.
$72 million.
It's in those clips that I send you guys. Check it out. You can't make it up.
That's probably why any time you send a claim into Aetna, they take forever to process it.
Right.
Because
they sit on your premium money and invest it and make millions for their executives, but they're not delivering good health care.
No, they aren't.
So
that's
why, I don't want to see the middle class scapegoated. I don't want to see union workers scapegoated. So if you ask me, this guy's name is Ron Williams, former CEO of Aetna, and now the new CEO, Mark Bertoloni, is blasting Sustinet. You know what? It's time to get back at these guys. Time to extract a fair share. Ask them to pay a fair share. That's what I'd like to see.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
What is the major opposition to this right now? For sure.
I think legislators, and I don't want to put it on the governor, I just think there's a real hesitance by the legislature, both sides of the aisle, and the governor, to take steps to raise taxes on the wealthy and to go after the big businesses. It's unfortunate, but they just have this real fear of doing that, and we've got to help them overcome that. The more people that contact the legislators and urge them to do the right thing, I think the better chance we have of making some adjustments in their budget and maybe, just maybe, saving school paraprofessionals and libraries and fire stations and getting our bridges and roads repaired, all the stuff that we need to do for the infrastructure and all the public structures that people need. We're only going to get there with a fair budget.
Do you sense any support in the legislature for our position? Do you think there's been inroads made with certain legislators who are really willing to carry that message and rally support?
That's, hard for me to answer. What we do is we're going around at membership meetings asking our members to contact legislators, and I think the only way I could even possibly report back to you on our next show on your next show is if people call their legislators. If legislators get 3 or 4 contacts, then that helps immeasurably, because I do think that they're a little bit hesitant and wary of trying to raise taxes on the wealthy and to close those loopholes that have benefited corporations and big businesses. So, you know, that's where we stand.
Yeah, as I said to you before, I don't think the way to balance the budget in Connecticut or any state is to tax people. I really feel that you have to be creative, and I really think you should form a state bank the way it's done in North Dakota.
We've talked about that. It's a great idea. And, you know, that's what's missing is that we need more creativity in trying to, you know, we said the labor movement has long proposed, I don't mean to digress, but we proposed a nonprofit mutual insurance company to handle workers' compensation. And we need that for healthcare overall, too. Take that profit motive out, have a nonprofit entity. So that now it's not going to be dictated by guys making $72 million. You know, that's the problem. The system is overrun with people who have their hands in everybody's pockets, meaning you, me, and Leo, and all your listeners.
What do you think? I wasn't sure how Sistinet was doing. Is Malloy
well,
going
to... That was asked tonight by three or four different people, and he does seem to be retreating a bit from having, you know... having that public entity, that nonprofit public entity, manage healthcare. But I think that the pooling, you know, we're going to keep pushing on pooling and pushing on Sustinet. The insurance industry, again, led by people like that guy who makes $72 million, the insurance industry is pushing back very hard against Sustinet. So, hey, I'm going to lose you. I apologize.
I can hear a lot of people there. It sounds like there was a very good turnout. That's always
there
wonderful.
There was. So
that's
so
always
I owe you
really
a better. I owe you a better half hour, but I hate to cut you off, but I appreciate your having me. I know I'm gonna lose you in a couple minutes.
Okay. Well, you know, Larry, we appreciate so much too for reporting to us really right from Middletown. And take care, and we'll talk.
Yeah, and read the article in the Clips about the $72 million guy. And Leo and Lila, I'll be in touch with you, and we'll have a better environment for talking next time.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank
okay.
you. Take care, you guys.
That was Larry Dorman talking to us from a meeting, a town hall meeting in Middletown, Connecticut. He was reporting on Dan Malloy's budget proposal. He was there to make sure the union voice was heard. He's been around at various town hall meetings. This was the last one.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, as much as I understand what he's doing, I understand what Larry's saying, but, I mean, Malloy wants to eliminate the sales tax.
Folks who are listening,
this is in
Connecticut.
But, you know, now Connecticut's considered the highest per capita income in the country. Right.
Or one of the highest.
No, it is the highest. It was proclaimed the highest. And this bastard is going after stuff that's so petty. All right, this Malloy, that's what pisses me off about him. I mean, he wants to eliminate the sales tax free week. There's 1 week a year
I don't even think it's a
clothing
great deal.
And it's
for kids going back to school.
But that's so petty. Increase sales tax to 6.35%. It's now at what, 5%?
Mm-hmm.
It's about 5%. He increased tax and diesel taxes to 28 cents a gallon. Now, we're at $4 a gallon as of today in most places in Connecticut, and he wants to jump another 28 cents a gallon on diesel and taxes. You imagine what that's going to do to the people? I mean, it's ridiculous. Especially to small
that's
independent.
That's gas and diesel.
Yeah, but the small independent truckers and stuff, what the hell?
Never mind small independent truckers, just people going to work.
No, I know, but they're in business, and we were going to work, I mean, another 28 cents a gallon on top of that. You know, it's increased taxes on hotel rooms, cigarettes, alcohol, insurance companies, and real estate sales. Wow, increased taxes on real estate sales. That's interesting.
Well, when I see this, when I'm looking at this, yeah.
Tax searchers. Tax corporation earned for income earned in other states. Okay, I agree with that. There's nothing wrong with that. If your home is here, you should be taxed here, you know, for everything. That makes sense, right? For tax, for corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Expand the death tax. So what do they only want to expand the death tax for? Okay. Increase motor vehicle registration fees. Increase driver's license fees. Create.
They're already high.
Yeah, they're already high. And property tax on boats and aircraft. And taxes on pet grooming.
I want to make a comment on that, so just stop for a minute.
Packing and crating for credit.
Some of these things, like taxes on pet grooming, yoga, limousine service, haircuts, it's going to force an underground economy, that's all that's going to
sure.
be. Sure,
it's
know?
All going to be all cash, if it's not all cash already. You
give a few yoga classes, like you're going to collect tax on
yeah,
it, come
or,
on.
Yeah, you know, kill you. Or a guy...
A groom somebody's
know,
dog for a few dollars.
Guitar lessons or something, guy gets $20 an hour to teach somebody guitar lessons, and he's got to give the state, $1.20?
Mm.
You know what I mean? For tax? And I don't think so. It's ridiculous. Yoga is the same way. Emissions and dues are going up. Electricity generation is going to, you're going to tax that. Cabarets, waste to energy facilities,
hospitals.
I don't know.
It's all taxes that affect
the middle and lower class. There's nothing fair here.
There's no shared pain at all.
If you're making $1 million a year or more, which is a lot of Connecticut people do.
It's not going to affect them much.
It's not going to affect them. It will affect anyone else under that. But anyway, so.
I'd like to see, as Larry said, a millionaire's tax.
Yeah.
I'd like to see,
5% millionaire's tax. Why not? Yeah?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see some taxes like that.
On top, a surcharge.
It just is an unfair tax structure.
Yeah, and they got to tax everybody. Sales tax is the poor man's tax, and that's going to kill everybody, you know. I keep adding that shit stuff on. This one here, I know what I want. I wanted to read that because this was quite bad. Radiation risk in Europe. From Fukushima, no longer negligible. The risk associated with iodine-131 contamination in Europe is no longer negligible, according to CRIRAD,
a French research body on radioactivity.
The NGO is advising pregnant women and infants against risky behavior, such as consuming fresh milk or vegetables with large leaves. That's risky behavior. Huh?
Mm.
In response to thousands of inquiries from citizens concerned about fallout from the Fukushima nuclear disaster in Europe, CRIRAD has compiled an information package on the risk of radioactive iodine-131 contamination in Europe. And you can bet your bottom dollar that it's the same in the United States.
Oh, it's probably worse.
Probably worse.
We got hit with it first.
Yeah. The document published on April 7th advises against consuming rainwater. It says vulnerable groups such as children and pregnant or breastfeeding women should avoid consuming vegetables with large leaves, fresh milk, and creamy cheese.
The risk related to prolonged contamination among vulnerable groups of the population can no longer be considered negligible and is now necessary to avoid risky behavior. However, the Institute underlines that there is absolutely no need to lock oneself indoors or take iodine tablets. CRIRAD says its information note is not limited to the situation in France and is applicable to other European countries as the level of contamination is currently the same in Belgium, Germany, Italy, and Switzerland.
For instance, data for the West Coast of the United States, which received the Fukushima radioactive fallout 6 to 10 days before France, reveals that levels of radioactive iodine-131 concentration are 8 to 10 times higher there, the Institute says. Right.
According to CRIRAD, a huge proportion of the inquiries it has received concerns the risks associated with rainwater and drinking tap water. The Institute stresses there is no risk whatever, even for children, of standing in the rain without protection. But consumption of rainwater as a primary source of drinking water should be avoided, particularly among children, it said. As for tap water, underground catchments or large rivers should not present any problem. But the Institute suggests that the situation of water from reservoirs that collected rainwater from one or more watersheds, such as hillside lakes, should be examined more closely. As for watering one's garden with collected rainwater, watering only the earth and not the leaves of vegetables, as absorption is faster and more significant on leaf surfaces than through roots.
Food chain. Spinach, salads, cabbage, and other vegetables with large surface areas are among those food products that are particularly sensitive to iodine-131 contamination. If they are cultivated outside and exposed to rainwater, washing vegetables does not help, as iodine-131 is quickly metabolized by the plant. Fresh milk and creamy cheeses, as well as brie and camembert and all that, as well as meat from cattle that have been outside eating grass, are categorized as foods that may have been indirectly contaminated and must also be monitored. Contamination of milk and cheese from goats and cream may be a greater magnitude than that of produce from cows.
The Euratom Directive of 13th of May, 1996, establishes general principles and safety standards on radiation protection in Europe. According to the directive, the impact of nuclear activity can be considered negligible if its doses of radiation do not exceed 10 millisieverts. Beyond this value, possible measures should be considered to reduce exposure. While radioactive iodine-131 is mostly present in the air in the form of grass, in the case of the Fukushima fallout, the main issue is to limit ingestion of iodine-131. The amount of iodine-131 capable of delivering a dose of 10 millisieverts varies greatly depending on the age of the consumer. Children up to 2 years old are the most vulnerable. An ingestion of 50 becquerel, is enough to deliver to the body a dose of 10 millisieverts, according to the Institute. If the foods, leafy vegetables, milk, etc., contain between 1 and 10 BQ per kilogram or more, it is possible that the reference level of 10 millisieverts may be exceeded within 2 to 3 weeks. Contamination to continue over coming weeks. Note that huge amounts of radioactivity have been released by the Fukushima Daiichi plant since Saturday, the 12th of March, 2011. On Tuesday, the 5th of April, 24 days after the accident, the releases continue. This means that the contamination of airborne masses in Europe will last just as long, with a delay linked to the movement of radioactive aerosol gases over some 15,000 kilometers. It also cited a technical report from the operating company TEPCO and the Japanese Nuclear Safety Authority, NISA, which fear releases over several more days, even weeks. If more fires are reported or if the operators are forced to release more steam in order to prevent hydrogen explosions, new massive waste releases will occur, the Institute warned. Well, that doesn't seem so good, does it?
We just found out that the casements
since the writing of this article, huh?
Yeah, the casements have been melted down. They're broken, so the rods are actually just melting now, and that's going to just cause hell. They don't know what to do with it.
Well, it should be cemented over. That's what they did at Chernobyl.
Yep.
But they refuse to do that, and I'm not sure why.
I don't know. DNA database will be used to catch owners who refuse to clean up their dog mess. Imagine that.
How weird is that?
Yeah, this is on the island of Capri. The Millionaire's Playground.
Beautiful island.
Italian island of Capri will use a DNA database to identify pet owners who refuse to clean up after their dogs. The mayor of Capri has announced plans for a CSI-style DNA database to catch the owners of dogs who soil the picturesque walkways on the Mediterranean island. and using sophisticated DNA testing normally reserved for major crimes, dog owners will have to submit their dog's genetic details to a central database. Samples of dog mess will be sent to crime laboratories for testing to identify the guilty dog and the owner.
Boy, it must be quite a mess on that island.
Must
with dog
problem, I guess.
Piles of dog SH all over the place.
But local police
will be able to match any fouling on the whitewash alleyways of Capri to any of the 1,000 resident dogs. The fine for the dog fouling is €2,000.
Wow.
The unusual step is the latest scheme of Mayor Limbo, who is intent on maintaining Capri's reputation as a top tourist destination.
The rocky outcrop in the Bay of Naples has been a favorite site for second homes since the Roman Emperor Tiberius held Bacchanala at his Villa Jovi 2,000 years ago. In more recent years, it's played host to stars including Liz Taylor, Clark Gable. Limbo has been trying to protect the 1.2 square mile island, which has a population of, it's pretty dense for one.
How much?
1.2 square miles.
Hmm.
For the
What's
disorder,
the population?
7,300. For the disorder of nearby Naples.
No, 7,305.
7,305.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tourists have swung the island every year.
Man. It's a beautiful island. Just beautiful.
That's why he doesn't want any doggy crap on it.
I don't blame him. I guess, you know, you have to fight for every tourist dollar, and I guess that's...
He has already tried to ban lawnmowers and leaf blowers in the peak summer season, but retreated after protests from gardeners. In previous years, the island has also banned wooden clogs with the wearing of bikinis in the town.
And the wearing of bikinis in the town.
Why wouldn't clogs?
I don't understand that.
Local law in Capri states that dog owners are required to clean up after their animal if they foul on the street. But on an island that prides itself on the bella figura, beautiful figure, lifestyle, many avoid the responsibility of cleaning up after their pets. Officials have reported cases of people, particularly the elderly, falling over and fracturing limbs while trying to avoid the mess.
Mayor Limbo says he loves dogs and hates only irresponsible owners. He said in the past there have been unpleasant episodes like tourists slipping and hurting themselves. The Italian newspaper La Stampa claims the one-meter-wide passageways of the historic center of Capri was so narrow to walk down them you often have to do a slalom. Mayor Limbo is taking advantage of existing law requiring all dogs to have blood tests for canine leishmaniasis, a disease transmitted by sandflies. Oh, so that's how they're going to get their DNA. Aha.
Uh-huh.
So you'll be next if you do that.
Oh, we won't be taking our dog down there. Can't stop him from doing his business. And let's see, surging food price, fuel, ethanol. I believe that.
That's a
surge in global food prices has prompted fresh criticism of U.S. subsidies for ethanol, which diverts massive amounts of corn from global food supplies for energy. Producers of ethanol argue that the biofuel helps blunt the impact of high imported petroleum prices. But critics say that the U.S. policy giving tax breaks for ethanol used in motor fuel ends up being bad for food, energy, and the environment.
Yeah, there's no point in following up on that. Let's see. Cops say the darndest things. Why do you film people? Let's see.
I don't know if I have this 4 minutes. I don't know.
Yeah.
You want to see if it's funny?
We want to see if this is funny just to give you a laugh.
Fuck the police. I don't even know where the fuck my ride is. I don't know either, man.
Hey. You want to say fuck the police? Don't say
fuck. Yeah, I think I'll pass on that.
Yeah, I don't get that one.
Okay.
There might be another little video we can play that might have something in it.
Yeah. I just want to mention regarding this. Fukushima radiation taints U.S. milk supplies at levels 300% higher and EPA maximums.
Exactly.
The U.S. Environment...
Pre-adjustment or post-adjustment? They already adjusted all these things.
No, they haven't. It hasn't passed yet for them to adjust it. But the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency continues to release new data showing the various milk and water supply samples from across the U.S. are testing increasingly high for radioactive elements such as iodine-131, cesium-134, and cesium-137, all of which are being emitted from the ongoing Fukushima nuclear fallout. As of April 10, 2010,
2011.
23 U.S. water supplies have tested positive for radioactive iodine and, worst of all, milk supplies. Milk samples from at least three U.S. locations have tested positive for iodine-131.
And one was in Massachusetts.
At levels exceeding EPA maximum containment levels. So, folks, we are in...
Let's see
where they are.
I think one was in Massachusetts. We read about that. No,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, let's see. I can't tell whether. Even so, the falling water supplies have thus far tested positive for iodine, with the dates they were collected in parentheses. Los Angeles, Philadelphia.
Excuse me.
Muscle Shoals, Alabama. Niagara Falls. And the list goes on. Again, these figures do not include the other radioactive elements being spread by Fukushima. Also, there are no telling what the actual cumulative radiation levels really were in these samples. Figures are also taken 2 weeks ago and were only just recently reported. If current samples were taken at even more cities, and if the tests conducted concluded that many other radioactive elements beside iodine, actual contamination levels would likely be frighteningly higher. But in typical government fashion, the EPA still insists that everything is just fine, and even though an increasing amount of water supplies are turning up positive, or even just the radioactive elements for which the agency is testing, and these levels seem to be increasing as a direct result of the situation of the Fukushima plant, which continues to worsen with no end in sight. And water may be least of the problems. Our EPA data just released on Sunday shows that at least three different milk samples in different parts of the U.S. have tested positive. So why the milk contamination is significant? Milk, of course, typically represents the overall condition of the food chain because cows consume grass and are exposed to the same elements as food, crops, and water supplies. In other words, when cow's milk starts testing positive for high levels of radioactive elements, this is indicative of radioactive contamination entire food supply.
Well, it's all cumulative. You eat the meat from the cow, who's eating the grass, who's drunk the water.
No, but what they're saying is that, you know, if the cow's got it, then the entire food supply is in peril.
And what can they do about it? Absolutely nothing.
That's why
they're not reporting on it. There's nothing they can do about it. What are they going to do?
No safe level of radiation from nuclear fallout. Background and airplane radiation is an internal emitter of radiation. A Fukushima introduced radiation in food and water in an internal emitter. The former, which is considered normal radiation, hits your body from the outside, while the latter goes directly inside your body and into your digestive tract. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see the immense difference between the two, and the much more severe consequences associated with literally ingesting radiation versus having it hit your skin.
In reality, there really is no safe level of radiation. No matter how many times the EPA and others repeat the lie that radiation levels are too low to have any significant impact, the statement itself is patently false. Many experts, including Jeff Patterson, DO, former president of Physicians for Social Responsibility, have stated that radiation exposure at any level is unsafe, and they are correct. There is no safe level of radion occlude exposure, whether from food, water, or other source, period, said Patterson. Exposure to radion occludes, such as iodine-131 and cesium-137.
Nucleides.
Radion nucleides. increase the incidence of cancer. For this reason, every effort must be taken to minimize the radionuclide content in food and water. And now that radioactive levels in some areas have actually exceeded EPA maximums, Patterson's statement is even more chilling. So while the mainstream media continues its near-total blackout on Fukushima, the situation is actually becoming more severe than it's ever been. Time will tell how severe the long-term effects of this disaster will be, but one thing is for sure, Fukushima radiation cannot and should not be taken lightly.
So there, you can check this out at
Natural News?
Natural News,
yeah.
Naturalnews.com. Yeah. We've got about a feature to be calling pretty soon.
Yeah.
Industry's war on nature. What are the bees telling us? Iceland rejects debt repayment plan.
Well, we shouldn't play that now. We'll
it's only 2 minutes.
We'll play that after, in the winter. No, Japan, of course, this week was hit with another earthquake. It's, what a mess over there.
I thought.
This is interesting. Just to even just read the first piece of it. This is in ex-top TEPCO exec. No concrete for nuclear plant. Get fuel first. TEPCO won't take to the Chernobyl approach to resolving the nuclear power plant crisis. Taipei Electric Power Company TEPCO advisor Tokisaki Enomoto is pictured at the company's Tokyo head office. It may take 10 years to start removing damaged nuclear fuel from Fukushima No. 1 nuclear power plant, but the plant's operator is adamant not to bury the damaged reactors while fuel remains in them, a company official has said. We will definitely remove the fuel. Tokyo Electric Power Company TEPCO advisor Toshiaki Enomoto stress that the company will not bury the reactors in concrete in a stone tomb approach like the one adopted at Chernobyl. Do you think that's about money? Oh, and here's our caller on the air.
No, but just put on these music there.
I will. Let me put him on first. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Woody is with us. Let me put on his music. There you go.
On the ropes as you step into the ring with Woody. Tonight's topics, indictments in college basketball, NBA playoffs, Bonds awaits decision, and Clemens the start of his trial, Manny being Manny, and of course my take on the Yankee Red Sox weekend series. Okay, let's get down to it. Two former University of San Diego basketball players and one of the program's all-time leader in points and assists and a former assistant coach are at the center of a betting scandal, according to federal authorities. Brandon Johnson, the star player, Brandon Dowdy, former coach, Thaddeus Brown, and several other people were named in a federal indictment that charges them with running an elaborate gambling ring that affected the outcomes of games. Now, apparently this investigation was started on a marijuana distribution conspiracy, and I guess it, you know, found out, you know, while they were in the process, I guess they came across this gambling scheme. I guess they were taking the money from the marijuana and then they were fixing games. So it was kind of intricate, but, you know, that's what happens. Anyway, among the claims are that the 24-year-old Johnson took a bribe to influence a February 2010 USD game and that Brown and Dowdy solicited another party to affect the outcome of a game at the University of California, Riverside, in February. A federal grand jury upped the indictment in San Diego Friday and it was unsealed yesterday. There's more to come. I think like somewhere about 10 people are indicted. This is definitely going to get uglier, and you can be sure that, you know, all parties will be looking to cooperate. So we'll see how that goes. This is definitely going to be an ongoing story. Anytime you get a federal indictment, it's usually a heavy-duty ordeal. All right, moving on. We have the NBA playoffs, okay? In the East, in the first round, you have Chicago facing Indiana. That's pretty much a walk in the park for Chicago. Miami goes up against Philadelphia. Probably a tough series, but Miami definitely, you know, will, you know, they'll out-talent them. I think the most interesting game is the Boston-New York game. To me, Boston seems prime for the picking. New York just might be able to get enough to get it done. We'll see, but it should be a very interesting series. And then you have Orlando versus Atlanta. You got to take Orlando. Out in the West, San Antonio and New Orleans ended up in the first round. You got to like San Antonio. Dallas against Memphis, obviously Dallas. Lakers and Portland. Lakers. A lot of times in the first round, you just got to take the favorites. That's usually how it is in basketball. It's never very, you know, you don't get too many upsets. Then you have Oklahoma City versus Denver. You'll probably take Oklahoma City. It could go either way. That's a close one. But should be interesting. For once, the NBA playoffs should be interesting this year. You have a lot of controversy. Chicago is certainly better than people had expected. Miami is not as good as people expected. And the West is a little different than people had expected. So the NBA playoffs should be very good. It's going to be interesting. I think it would be great if Chicago finally got back to the NBA Finals. And if they won it all again without Jordan, that would be kind of cool. I'm sure the city of Chicago would really love that. And it would just be, it would be great for the sport, but we'll see. I also think it would be great if you know, if the Knicks could get a win. And they really, it would be great for the city of New York for them to beat Boston in the playoffs. The Knicks haven't won a playoff in so long, nor have they been in the playoffs in quite some time. So... but that'll be interesting. Moving on. Now, the jurors in the Barry Bonds federal perjury trial ended their second day of deliberations yesterday when they hadn't reached a verdict. Bonds, of course, was surrounded by family and friends. You know, he left the federal building after spending 6 hours, you know, smiling and waving and acting like he's going to win it. However, what the jury did was they asked for a repeat of testimony from his childhood friend and personal shopper, a woman by the name of Kathy Hoskins. Now, what she testified to seeing was Bonds getting injected in the stomach by a personal trainer, Gary Anderson. Now, Bonds has always maintained the fact that the only person who's ever injected him was a doctor. So, you know, this is kind of the crux of it here, you know, whether he committed perjury or not. I think what's interesting in this case, and as well as the Clemens case, what kind of handcuffs Clemens and is going to, you know, handcuff Bonds as well, is sure you have a, you know, kind of lineup of who's who as far as scumbags are, you know, guys that have been busted for selling steroids, guys that have been busted for doing this and that, testifying against you, much like in a lot of cases, a lot of criminal cases, you know, where you just have one criminal testifying against another. What you have here is, and as well as the Clemens case, you have people who have, you know, have nothing to gain by testifying. You know, when you have this woman, this Kathy Hoskins, who definitely didn't want to come to testify, you know, her brother threw her under the bus, and that, you know, he's the one that's, you know, that told the court to subpoena her. You know, if you just, you put all that other testimony aside and you listen to the testimony of this one woman, well, I mean, what does she have to gain? Probably nothing. So I assume Bonds' goose is cooked. You know, that's the testimony that they wanted repeated, and I think, you know, he's probably screwed. Moving on to Clemens, he's got kind of the same thing going on. The Justice Department, I guess they've been lining up witnesses, and they've been issuing subpoenas last week, informing several key parties to be available when his trial begins on July 6th at the District Court in Washington. Among those they believe to have received subpoenas are former Yankee Andy Pettit. And then there's a convicted steroid dealer, Kirk Randomowski, Clemens' former personal trainer, Brian McNamee. You know, I mean, you look at, you know, convicted steroid dealer, axe to grind, former personal trainer, axe to grind. But then you got Clemens' buddy, you know, Yankee, former Yankee Andy Pettit, Well, he doesn't have an axe to grind, and he has nothing to gain, you know, by, you know, other than just telling the truth. I'm sure he doesn't want to get hit with a perjury, and he's already admitted, you know, to he and Clemens discussing the advantages of juicing up and everything else. So, again, I think Clemens is going to be hard-pressed to win his case. He was quoted earlier saying, guys have been popping off and running their mouth, talking like they know the situation, and they don't. He said, we have to take it on the chin a little bit right now, but we'll eventually have our say. As I said before, I think Clemens will probably get on the stand. He's so arrogant and thinks that he's right. And he's just going to sink his own ship. I think the Pettit testimony is probably going to just do him in, as the female shopper, the Hoskins woman, probably did in Barry Bonds. You know, these people don't have anything to gain. You know, it's not a former trainer who has an axe to grind. It's not a convicted steroid dealer. It's, you know, Andy Pettit, you know, Clemens' buddy. You know, it's not someone with an axe to grind. It's Barry Bonds' former personal shopper and childhood friend. I mean, you know, they just want to go and tell the truth and get out of there. They don't want to be there, but they're going to tell the truth. And that's what's probably going to sink these guys, because in my opinion, I mean, they're definitely juicing and they're definitely lying. I mean, and that's that. And Clemens' smartest move would have been to keep his mouth shut when they were making these accusations a couple of years ago. But he wanted to scream from the highest mountaintop, I'm innocent, I'm innocent, I'm innocent. Let me tell you something. If you're guilty, 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 keep your mouth shut and let the press move on to something else. But, you know, Clemens want to get up there and act like he's, you know, Mr. All-Star without supplements. Well, we'll see. And speaking of supplements, a guy that I've talked about on many occasions, Manny Ramirez, or now the retired Manny Ramirez, apparently was busted once again for the third time testing positive for a masking agent. So Manny's been juicing again, as usual, what a surprise, and he gets busted again for the third time. He would have been facing a 100-game drug ban, but, you know, Manny just kind of shrugged his shoulders, said he was disappointed, didn't even bother apologizing to the Tampa Bay Rays, who were, you know, counting on his bat, you know, for a big bat for this season, and he just, you know, just kind of shrugged his shoulders and goes off into the sunset. I've listened to a lot of sportscasters, so on and so forth, and all of them just can't wait to pile on Manny. I mean, he's an easy target, and I've said many derogatory things about him over the years. All of them are mostly true. He's a scumbag, and, you know, he's arrogant for thinking he can get away with it again. I mean, you know, he's already been busted twice. I mean, dude, learn your lesson. But, you know, Manny thought he could get away with it again. And, you know, I mean, they've got some great testing stuff. They know what to look for. And believe me, you know, guys like Manny, they know. So, you know, I mean, I feel a little bit badly for Manny. He's getting up in years. Probably feels that he has to supplement in order to keep the power, keep the bat speed, whatever the case may be. But, you know, it's just not going to do him any good. And, you know, he's out of the game. And from what a lot of these guys who have a say in the Hall of Fame, they're not going to vote for him. So I wonder if Bonds and Clemens will stay out of the Hall of Fame. They kind of have a lot of other laurels to rest on. I don't know. Plus, they were never actually busted for steroids. They're just lying about using them. You got to remember, these guys never actually tested positive. You know, Clemens never tested positive. Yeah, so, I know. You know, Manny being Manny, what a surprise. That Bears watching, though, you never know. I wonder what else Manny's going to do. It's kind of interesting, but we'll see. And the Clemens thing, as I said, definitely Bears watching, and I'll just continue to report on this stuff as it comes. Now, this past weekend, the Yankees and the Red Sox banged out first series of the season. I thought it was kind of interesting. The Red Sox, you know, came into the series not winning too many games. I think they won one game prior to the series, or maybe they didn't have won any games, and they were just looking very dire. You know, they came in there with game one. Lackey pitched like garbage. Unfortunately, Hughes was worse. That game could have went either way. It's unfortunate the Yankees weren't able to steal that one. Hughes was just horrendous. I think that's definitely an issue for the Yankees, definitely an issue that needs to be addressed. His velocity is down. He's the kind of guy that needs his velocity. You know, that's a situation that definitely bears watching. I think he's going to stay in the top of the rotation for now, but I think with another garbage performance, I think they're going to probably move him down a little bit, and we'll have to see what happens. You got to like Nova. Sure, he didn't get the win on Saturday, but the kid pitches hard out. You know, that's pretty tough getting thrown right into the lion's den there up in Fenway. A lot of pressure. You know it's a big series. But you got to like what you saw out of the Nova kid. And there's definitely more to come with him. Jeter seems to concern me a little bit. God, his fielding just doesn't look that great. And he just really hasn't swung the bat all that good yet. I know it's early, but I don't know. Man, it worries me a little bit. Just as a Yankee fan, I just, I hope he turns it up a notch. We'll see. I mean, as I said, it's early. These guys usually play better when it gets a little warmer. So we'll certainly see. You got to like the bat work you've seen out of Mark Teixeira so far. The guy's got a lot of home runs. The Yankees' hit batting average is like 230 or something like that, but they lead the league, or I think they're tied with Texas for home runs. So you got to like the power is still there. And dudes are definitely going to start hitting better. Brett Gardner definitely needs to hit better. Every time I turn around, he's hitting a ground ball into a double play. I mean, that's horrendous. You know, they really need to pick it up, and I think they're going to. As far as Boston goes, they seem to be underachieving right now. The Rays beat them last night. Carl Crawford hasn't really looked too comfortable at the plate. He stole a couple bases the other night. I think what they got out of Beckett, great game, and Sabathia battled for the Yankees. The Yankees have kind of smacked Beckett around the last few times. So to me, Beckett was due for a great game. Everyone's like, oh, thank God Beckett's Beckett. It's early. Let's just see if his back holds up. And, if he's still pitching like this after the All-Star break, show me. Don't tell me, show me. I need to see it. One game's not enough for me. Like I said, it's early. It's definitely early. So more to come on baseball, obviously. It's a long season, and I definitely like talking about it. I could probably go on all night, but I shall not. I will allow this show to go on. That's it for this week. Shout out to all my Woodheads out there. Ron, Mark, Leo, Dino, Troy, everyone at the Northeast Athletic Club. My partner, Money Mike. That's it for this week. Get out there, enjoy some of that warm weather once it stops raining.
I got Swagger. That's always a good one, too. I play that one for you, too. A little stay on the bluesy thing.
Going to be a close vote. The polls were just too marginal to be definitive. and the relief for the Party for the No campaign was voiced as each preliminary result was announced. Up until a few days ago, it looked like the Yes campaign was going to win this referendum, but count after count after count has come in, no, no, no. It seems Iceland doesn't want to pay for the sins of its bankers. Campaigners here say other countries should take notice of what's happened here.
Well, I think we may be igniting a spark here that will have a positive consequence. Namely, that those that engage in business, hoping to profit, they will be held accountable when things turn sour, but the bill won't be sent to the public or to the taxpayers.
There's a $5 billion bill left by the collapse of Landsbanki in 2008. Its internet outfit, iSave, left thousands of British and Dutch customers out of pocket. But Iceland's government admits it couldn't convince the people that they should pick up some of that tab. This no vote will probably mean a lengthy court battle over liability with the British and Dutch governments.
This is a dispute that now will go normal routes in the EAA EU system. No one can deny that you have the right to refer a case which you cannot solve with agreements to the courts.
So regardless of how its people voted, judges may well decide Iceland has to pay anyway. Young Icelanders could be well into adulthood before the consequences of 2008 are put behind them. Rory Challens, Al Jazeera, Reykjavik.
Okay, well...
So it doesn't even matter how you vote anymore.
Not in Iceland, it doesn't matter here either. Bankers aren't going to be
put off
by a vote.
We have something here on U.S. reserve dollars. U.S. think is up for the world order. This is
unreserved dollar.
Yeah, unreserved. Listen to this.
The first major financial players from around the world are deciding on the future of the global economy in the iconic U.S. town of Bretton Woods. The summit held by billionaire philanthropist George Soros is focusing on the place the emerging powers will take in the world order. Archie's Lauren Lister joins us live from the venue. Hi, Lauren. What have been the main things to come out of the meeting so far? Is there any sense that they've got the ideas to forge a brighter financial future?
Well, those are some lofty goals. So far, the conference has been underway since yesterday, so it's just kind of gotten going, and we've heard from George Soros, the billionaire investor who backs this think tank that is holding it, and also prominent people like Larry Summers, who was the former economic aide, kind of the top guy, the top voice in U.S. President Obama's ear. So far, though, the themes that we've heard are not so much what needs to take place going forward, but that something needs to change in a new way of thinking about the global economy and the financial order and the tools that people have to use and that countries have to use need to change. There needs to be new thinking going forward. One of the main issues that we've heard from already is something that the original Bretton Woods conference held here established. You'll remember back in 1944, countries all met here to decide on a global economic framework, and that was the time that the U.S. dollar was named the reserve currency and countries pegged their exchange rate to it, which is the framework that holds today, and it's something that's coming under question. Yesterday, we heard George Soros say that one of the big questions is if the U.S. dollar should still be the reserve currency, and in fact, he said that other currencies already are kind of taking its place, that it no longer is the main reserve currency, that the euro has a place in the economy that kind of fulfills that role or could, and that so much diversification has happened with other currencies and also with commodities like gold and oil. And so that's one of the real questions that thinkers are asking here, and moving away from that idea that maybe the U.S. dollar and the United States in its place that it had when this was a unipolar world back in the 1940s, the thinking that that's outdated and that a new framework needs to emerge that takes into account, as you mentioned, developing economies, which have been the economies that have grown at a quick clip and emerged as powers over the last several years, including the BRIC nations of Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And even yesterday we heard a few times about how China has weathered the financial crisis much better than others and has been the real winner out of the financial crisis and of globalization.
Right, so lots of questions, obviously, but what strategies are being pushed forward at this summit to change the world financial system?
Right. You know, that's a really good question, as Annie said, because we haven't... really heard that yet. So far, it's been a lot of academic talk, talk among, you know, top economists and people from the finance sphere and banking that are kind of theorizing and talking about, you know, ideas about what has gone wrong and what could be fixed, but no real battle cry, no real call for change and what that would look like yet. And, you know, to remind, these aren't world leaders that that enact actual policy. These are thinkers, these are economists. So it's not really clear what exact direct action can come out of this, but I asked Larry Summers yesterday about this, about what role these kind of conferences with these major players, you know, someone like Soros, anything he says pretty much makes news and is influential when it comes to finance, when it comes to the economy. So I asked what role these kind of things can have, and he said that they do in kind of a cumulative way, that they're often the precursor to the actual policy that gets pushed forward years later. And I'll remind you that some of the policymakers here do still have a role and are close with governments. Even yesterday, Mr. Summers said he couldn't answer a question on Japan selling treasuries because he's still selling U.S. treasuries in the wake of their quake and tsunami and the disaster and what they'll need to repair their economy. And he said he couldn't answer that because he's still much too close to government, just kind of showing that a lot of the names here do have influence still in people that are making policy when it comes to the economy.
Great. Archie's Lauren Lister reporting live from New Hampshire. Thanks for that update.
So, that's freaky. Get ready for our new world currency, folks.
Yeah, that's what that's all about.
Get ready.
Well, there's the thing on chemtrails, Leo. You should go up to that just because it'd be a good thing to play before John comes on. Dry rain on blue.
I haven't checked it out yet.
Well, we'll just
see. Attempting to photograph some fiber fallout.
The fiber fallout.
You can see it really calming down. I can see a lot of it. It's a blue sky day in Phoenix. It's Wednesday, March 30th, but we have all the stuff coming down. It's like it's raining. I can't believe it. And you can't see it unless you've got the sun in the right spot.
I think she's hallucinating.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see any dry rain there.
I didn't either.
It's a shadow of the...
mindless canned mainstream news media for people to read.
But just how mindless are the mainstream news sources to find out? I did a Google search on spent fuel rods and plutonium, and the results were a massive regurgitation of the exact same news from multiple mainstream news sources. That's pretty sad. That's from Google.
Yeah,
so much for Google.
Unfortunately. Johnny should be calling us pretty shortly here.
He was late last week, so. Oh.
Arab League to ask UN for a no-fly zone in Gaza. The Arab League Chief Amar Musa and the organization will ask the UN to impose a no-fly zone over Gaza, which Israel has pounded with airstrikes in response to rocket fire. Musa told an emergency meeting of Arab League ambassadors that the Arab bloc in the United Nations has been directed to ask for the Convention of Associates of the Security Council to stop Israeli aggression on Gaza and impose a no-fly zone. Israeli and Palestinian officials were on Sunday floating a ceasefire to end fighting in the coastal strip where Israeli airstrikes have killed at least 18 people since Thursday.
Eluding Social Security to wage war. This was a good article. As long as the $1.2 trillion annual budget for the military security complex is off limits to cutting, nothing can be done about the U.S. budget deficit except to renege on obligations to the elderly, confiscate private assets, or print enough money to inflate away all the debts, Paul Craig Roberts, former Assistant Treasury Secretary under President Reagan, warns. In the article titled "Stealing from Social Security to Pay for Wars and Bailouts," published in the April issue of the Rock Creek Free Press of Washington, D.C., Roberts says that Republicans are calling Social Security and Medicare entitlements, making them sound like welfare, when in fact workers over the lifetimes have contributed 15% of all their earnings to the payroll tax that funds these benefits and have every right to them. Yeah, I've been harping about that.
Yeah.
I said, they're not entitlements.
No.
We pay for that. That's ours.
They take it out of our pay every week. An article.
And far from the Social Security being in the red between 1984 and 2009, Roberts writes, the American people contributed $2 trillion more to Social Security and Medicare in payroll taxes than was paid out in benefits, but the government stole the sum to fund wars and pork barrel projects. What's more, under one realistic estimate, far from crashing into the red, Social Security would have produced a surplus revenue of $31.6 trillion by 2085, Roberts said.
Americans apparently are... Iraq war cost alone is 20% of the size of last year's entire U.S. economy. And instead of investing that sum at home, which would have produced income and job growth and solvency for state and local governments, the U.S. government wasted the equivalent of 20% of the economy in 2010 in blowing up infrastructure and people in foreign lands, Roberts says. The U.S. government spent a huge sum of money committing war crimes, while millions of Americans were thrown out of their jobs and foreclosed out of their homes. He added, viewed another way, the Pentagon continued to expand and put people to work to modernize its 700 and 800 bases abroad in order to dominate every corner of the globe, while public works and public employment in America are going into the toilet.
When short-term and long-term discouraged workers are added, the U.S. has an unemployment rate of 22%, Roberts says. A country with that large a percentage of out of work has a shrunken tax base and feeble consumer purchasing power. The U.S. media, he claims, is only reporting one-third of the real cost of the war, leaving out the sums needed for lifelong care for the wounded in Maine, the cost of lifelong military pensions of those who fought in the wars, the replacement cost of destroyed equipment, the opportunity cost of the resources wasted in war and other costs. President Obama's budget reduced, maybe he forgot the number. Just a second, John, we're expecting you to call. I don't know what number you're calling at. Just put him on. Put that on hold for a minute and talk to him. John Brennan, sorry for the pause, folks. That was John Brennan talking to us. His computer just crashed. But he's going to call in anyway and talk a little bit about a story about 9/11. So that's okay. Sometimes that happens. He's got a horrible virus, I guess, into his computer.
Yeah, he lost his stuff. He can't get in.
Oh.
As to that. So hopefully he'll call us shortly with an article.
With a report on the articles that he did read and just talk about it a little bit. He had a couple that he really wanted to talk about. But in the meantime, let's see, President Obama's budget, if passed, doesn't reduce the deficit over the next 10 years by enough to cover the projected deficit in the fiscal year 2012 budget alone. The Financial Authority writes, indeed, the deficits are likely to be substantially larger than forecast, as the military-industrial complex is more powerful than ever and shows no inclination to halt the wars for U.S. hegemony, Roberts says. Sherwood Ross heads a public relations firm for good causes and also runs the anti-war news service. Let's see. This was from
Ukrnet.info.
By Sherwood Ross. So that was interesting.
Ukrnet.info. Check that out. Such badness. Our buddy John, I don't know if he's going to call in or not. His computer broke down. So,
Bahraini forces Raz 5 mosque. Oh.
Here's another moron that desecrates the Quran. What the hell's the matter with him?
That's an English guy.
Yeah.
He was arrested.
Sian Owens, of a senior member of the British National Party and candidate for upcoming Welsh Assembly elections, had been arrested for burning a copy of the Holy Quran in his garden. It is turning a popular trick among Western politicians to misuse their people's feelings, which are fed up with hatred against Muslims and Islam in general, and garner more votes in a society filled with hatred. The senior BNP
British
member,
National Party member
is also no exception, since he has posted a video on the YouTube website showing himself burning a copy of the Quran. So,
a stupid thing to do.
The moron. Let's see. Bahraini forces raise 5 mosques. Wow. Saudi-backed Bahraini forces have reportedly destroyed 5 mosques in Hamad town and Mahous village in the east and northeast of the country as the regime continues its brutal crackdown on protesters. The mosques were razed on Saturday, a day after the Khalifa regime admitted that 2 protesters had died in its custody. Bahraini's troops had earlier destroyed the Watasi Mosque in Mahous. Now, these are all these...
Who are these people?
Yeah, I mean, you know...
Why are they destroying these sacred buildings?
The Saudi Arabians and the... they're coming to the aid of the Bahrainians who are blowing up, who are destroying mosques, sacred sites for these people. Doesn't make sense. And the hypocrisy of Saudi Arabia, which is the, you know, the deceit of Mohammed, you know, like bullshit. They could do this is unbelievable. Okay, destruction of security forces have also shot and killed protesters. recent surface video showed forces firing tear gas canisters at people's homes.
Huh.
Also on Sunday, a funeral procession was held. A 31-year-old who had died the day before in police custody. Seger was a human rights activist. His body bore signs of torture. Jesus.
Hmm.
Okay, on Saturday... All right,
Mariam Al-Khawaja of the Bahraini Center for the Human Rights and told Press TV that the number of detainees in Bahrain has reached 800, including at least 25 women. Dozens of people have been killed and thousands of others injured since the start of the revolution, which urges the ouster of the royal family. Led by Saudi Arabian, Bahraini Arab neighbors deployed their troops to the country in mid-March to reinforce the armed tactics against the protesters. The reinforcements have reportedly contributed to an increase in the use of violence against protesters. On Thursday, the International Medical and Humanitarian Organization of Doctors Without Borders confirmed earlier reports.
Armed paid forces swooped on the country's medical center soon after injured patients trust medical authorities with their identification and informed them that their injuries are protest-related.
Yeah, John is with us on the phone. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Lila. How are you tonight?
Pretty good. It sounds like you're a bit frustrated. Your computer just crashed, huh?
Yes, I was after queuing up quite a few interesting stories. And, you know, sometimes they say when you're over the target, you take the most flack. And perhaps that's what happened. I found a story about it's concerning 9/11, the events of
9/11. Oh, you did.
Sorry?
Yeah, why don't you recap that for us to the best of your ability?
Okay, I'd rather have got the details exactly. You can read the story on the Power Hour website. You can probably find it there. It was actually, no, it's not there. I did hear it read on their radio show this morning, so I looked it up myself. It wasn't even on their website. I forget where I actually did find it. It was a story about April Gallup. April Gallup was a lady who, she was a former military person, but she worked at the Pentagon on the morning of the attack on the events of 9/11. We know what happened to Twin Towers. It was the Pentagon, Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Well, a lot of people have said that there was no plane ever found, no wreckage ever found at the Pentagon. In fact, Jamie McIntyre, the CNN correspondent, is on video. Even there is video clips which are out there. I think the Power Hour did a video called 911 in Plain Sight, and some of the clips that were shown on that day, they showed them once and once only, and they pulled them within an hour. So a lot of people have those, including myself. I happened to be off work that morning, and I was recording with the old VHS tapes. You know, I had everything from C-SPAN to CNBC, CNN. It was just flicking back and forth recording. But Jamie McIntyre, the CNN correspondent, did say, there's nothing here that I can see that would look as if a large aircraft has hit the building. That was his comment, a comment he denies now. Obviously, they got to him and told him, you know, don't go there or if you want to live or whatever. But April Gallup was in the building, and her young son was with her, and she was, you know, injured slightly by the rubble.
Mm-hmm.
She came out of the building through the damaged part of the building where they managed to be able to escape right where the alleged impact of the airline was. She saw no aircraft wreckage whatsoever. She did smell cordite, which is like an explosive thing, as part of it's like, I guess the smell you'd get when you shoot off a cartridge in a gun, like the carbon smell. She did notice that, and she took Dick Cheney to court. If you look up the court case, Gallup versus Cheney, and it was recently held in New Haven, Connecticut.
Really?
April 5th.
And not a word in the press, huh?
Of course not. I guess more interesting, her attorney, whose name now, like I said, I was going to read the full thing tonight. Her attorney, when he got into court, there was three judges there, I guess. However they do it. I don't know why there's three judges. That's the way they do it, presiding over the hearing. One of them was a Judge Walker, John Walker. It turns out he's a cousin of the Bushes. He looks just like the Bushes. This
guy,
attorney, couldn't believe it. And they dismissed the case. They tried everything to demean him. It was unbelievable.
Really?
Yeah. So this is just like, you know, the Fox.
A phony trial. Yeah.
So what was she suing him for?
That's the thing I'm trying to get the full details of. Basically, for not protecting the people properly and just a whole series of different things. She basically knows that the place should have been protected better by our military and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's the biggest military sort of...
Pentagon was hit by a missile. That's what people think.
Right, that's what they figure. But either way, it should have been protected better. And the workers there should have been protected better. It should never have happened. And on that basis, they have anti-aircraft guns there, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't used.
And there was nothing that happened. Nobody tried to intercept it or anything else. They knew it was coming.
Yeah, she had a whole series of complaints like that. They also were doing drills for planes attacking the Pentagon and the Twin Towers 2 years before the event today. That was on ABC News. Peter Jennings did that one night. Peter Jennings is dead as well from cancer. But, I don't know. I'm not going to get conspiratorial and say maybe he shouldn't have run that story and they put something in his water and did him in quickly. There's a warning to other journalists like Dan Rather. But, one never knows. But certainly, all I know is when I touched on that story, my computer got a major, major virus. I mean, it shut down everything. I can't even operate the the malware.
Antivirus thing, huh?
Yeah, the worst I've ever seen.
Really? And you just had a problem. You just had everything all cleaned out, didn't you?
I did, yeah. And luckily, I have a friend who's really a genius at this stuff, so he'll sort it out in the next few days. But it's unfortunate. What was the other story I had tonight now? Well, it was a story about 65 different ways that you to prove you don't own anything that you think you do, because of all the taxes and stuff. So I don't really know what to talk about. Maybe go back to a quick chemtrail story or something.
Go ahead. But just so what kinds of things don't we own that we think we own? We certainly don't own our property. We know that.
Right. People think they own their houses, but they don't. If you don't pay your property taxes, they'll soon take your house off. If you don't pay your mortgage, you won't get the money you paid before back. They'll just take the house off you.
Right.
Your cars, if you don't pay your age, everything you own or you think you own really isn't quite your own. When you register a car, people don't realize it. That means the state now owns it. You registered it with them.
Really?
Yes. It's the devil's in the details. Yeah. They actually own that car. That's why they can tow it off the street. You don't at that point. You registered it with them. They're the
giving it to them.
Giving it to them. There are people who drive around in this country with no state plates or federal plates. A guy called Charlie Sprinkle, he runs a website called Copper Cards. That's copper, as in silver, copper, whatever. CopperCards.com. And he is a pretty wild man, but he has a website up and he will explain right there. I've heard him on radio shows, of course, and he has hundreds of people now signing up with him, and they basically are suing different municipalities who try and make them register their cars. They buy the car and they put the sign on the back, private property, and rescind their social security numbers. They basically opt out of the whole system.
Really?
They into it, and they don't want anything to do with it. It's like they're just said, I'm no longer dealing with the United States Corporation.
So what happens to them when they get arrested,
he said that is the problem. It's not something, in his local town, they've gone through it so many times, they just leave them alone now. But it is legally something you can do. But it's not for everybody, because you will be, as he said, if he drives out of state at all, they're right on him. They think he's, breaking the law. But he's not breaking the law. He's just not part of their law. He's a U.S. He's an American, not a U.S. citizen.
He's sovereign. He's not a corporation.
He's not part of the corporation of the United States.
Well, I give him a lot of credit for being able
but
to do
know,
that.
But you know what? If he's riding on the roads,
he'd be a really good guy for you guys to get on the radio show here some night.
To see, if he's driving on the road, he doesn't have any right to drive on the roads. if they're based on, you know, the corporate law. It's all owned by this.
I think the Constitution gives you the right to use the highways and byways of this country. Of course, it's their roads, too.
Yeah. I'd have to look that up, Jack.
Yeah, he explains it very well. Charlie Sprinkle, coppercards.com. I wish I had an audio here. If I could have known I was going to talk about it, I would have played the interview. It was excellent. He was on with Jeff Rentz, I think it was, a couple of years ago, and explained it very well. He sounds like an old cowboy, but I'll tell you what, he's the genuine article. He knows how to do it. If you fight back hard enough, you can win.
Charlie Sprinkle?
Yeah, Leo's going to look him up while you're talking. CharlieSprinkle.com?
No, Charlie Sprinkle is his name, but it's Copper Cards.
Copper Cards.
Copper.
Yeah, you've got the computer tonight. You can.
Copper Cards?
No, Cards, as in CARDS.
Oh, Copper Cards. Okay. Copper Cards. Claim your rights.
Let's see it. Coppercards.com. Okay, we're going right to that. We'll look it right up here. John?
Okay.
Let's see what he has to say on this. Take us a minute to get it up here.
Okay. Copper Cards. Claim your rights. Explanation of Restore America Plan. Background lawful theories.
Huh.
Okay.
Oh, juris secundum on the grand jury. Here's something. He has an audio here. This video is long available because YouTube account
associated this video has been
terminated. Hmm.
YouTube is shutting down anything that's a threat to the system.
Yep.
Due to multiple third parties, something or other.
Yep. So you can't play that.
Yeah, you can't even. The way they've got it set up, you can't even see why they took it off.
No reason. It's basically it's censorship.
That's what it is.
It's frightening how fast some of the videos are being taken down off YouTube.
Really?
I have stuff that I had on favorites here. It's gone. If you don't take it off your computer and put it onto a disk and save it, it's gone forever. Some of those videos of the cops beating up people and stuff, they're all gone.
Oh.
I don't know if you saw the TSA video. It was on InfoWars today where the TSA groped a little six-year-old girl, and
no.
Then tested her.
Tested her for what?
I don't know. Just you can hear them on the video. She had to take a drug test.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it's unbelievable. People were calling into the Alex Jones show today, freaking out. I mean, one guy said, "Thank God I don't have kids, because if that was my kid," he said, "he would have gone nuts in the airport."
It's
bizarre, and you grown adults will sit there and watch these poor children have that, even their own parents, you know, just sit there and watch their children almost have their pants pulled down in public. It's just outrageous.
Yeah, I never allowed it.
My God.
I'd be arrested, I guarantee.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely one, if I'm in the airport, I will raise my voice and tell those people to stop, you know, shout over at them. I don't mind if they make me not go on the plane. I don't care sometimes. I will get verbally abusive if I see them malhandling, especially children or something.
I mean, what the hell? You know.
How was your trip to Europe and back? Did you find much interference at the airport when you left?
I didn't, because I was really late. I was practically running to get the plane as the doors were closing, so they kind of rushed me through. So everybody was they were probably after frisking down 200. People are thereabouts that were getting on the same plane, and I come in with 3 minutes before they closed the door, because my bus had got delayed.
Oh, no.
I was sweating just to make that plane. It was 5 minutes later, that plane was gone. But I was rushed through the system, which was good for me. No searches, obviously, and my bag went to London instead of Dublin, but hey, you can't have it every way, right? I got it 2 days later.
I was going to say, did you get your bag eventually?
I did get it, but yeah, it was, you know, a couple of strange moments when you're waiting for that case in the other end of the world and nothing arrives, you know.
How was it when at the Dublin airport? What was it like there?
Well, when you arrive, it's just walk into the airport, and customs could stop you, but nobody did. Everything was really nice. On the way back, they screen you just like they do when you're coming into New York. They don't do the screening in New York now. It's done in Ireland.
Oh, okay.
So they do the electronic fingerprinting of your right hand, four fingers and the thumb.
Oh, really?
Left hand on the electronic screen of your fingerprints. It takes a picture of your bone structure as well, I believe. It's not just your fingerprints they're taking now. And then the retina scan you. And then a picture comes up on a screen, a video screen, of your suitcase. And they ask you a question, is this your suitcase? And you say yes or no. And then the usual questions, you know, are you flying for business or pleasure? Where have you visited? Just the usual.
Now, is that typical that they do a retina scan and a bone scan and all that when you travel nationally?
It never used to be.
The first time for you?
Second time. They did it in New York probably 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Same system that was set up in New York in Kennedy is now in Dublin. All based on the lie of 9/11. It's amazing how it changes the world.
Yeah, changed the world, huh?
Mm-hmm. We know that the real terrorists are in the White House.
Yeah, you got that right. We just had an interview tonight with Larry Dorman. I don't know whether you heard it or not. He was in Middletown at the last town meeting for our governor, Daniel Malloy, here in Connecticut.
Yes.
And he was talking about the up-and-coming budget. And talk about a regressive budget. We're going to be burdened with so many taxes that are really going to hurt the middle class and the poor in this state.
And with gasoline possibly going to end up around $6 a gallon by the time it's all over, with this particular price increase, it may come back down after that, but it's certainly going to reach that, I think. I don't know. It'll be $5 by the middle of the summer, I would say. But it has the possibility to go right up to $6. And I base that sentence I just said there on the fact that Lindsay Williams, who was an insider with Arco Oil, he came on the Alex Jones show. And he definitely is connected Masonically or otherwise. I don't know where he gets his info. He is a pastor. And he came out with a statement a couple of years ago when the price of fuel was going up. You know,
yeah.
It was almost $3.50 a gallon at the time. And he said it's going to go back down. Instead of being $200 a barrel, it's going down to $50 a barrel. Everybody laughed at him and said, yeah, right, it's going to go back down. Well, it did. He was 100% correct. And now he said that those same people who told him that, he doesn't give names, obviously. I don't know who he's connected with, but I know they're Masonic. I can't get into how I know that, but they are. They're planning basically to bankrupt the Arabs. Is what it's all about. They're going to bring the price of oil up, and when the Arabs have all our T bonds and all the treasury notes and the T notes, all that stuff, they're going to basically pull the plug on them, and they're going to start drilling our own oil here.
Oh, okay.
When they start drilling oil in this country, and when they start bringing the price of oil back down, that's what's going to hurt the Arabs. It will go back down, but it won't in the short term. It's going to get really, really expensive.
Wow. Well, right now I find it very expensive to fill my car. I bet you find it expensive too.
Oh, even the motorcycle. I can put $12, $15 in that, no problem now.
Really? Yeah.
$7 used to fill the tank to the brim. Now it's like 12. There's still plenty of room in there.
Boy, it's got to be a real burden on the working poor. I mean, most of their money must go to gas and the rest to food if they're lucky to have anything left over.
Yeah, God help anybody who's got a big RV. You know those big recreational vehicles? They do 6 miles to the gallon.
Really?
I mean, you think about it. If they do 100 miles... I don't know, 6 miles to the gallon, it's going to be like, I know, I'm not good at the math, but it's going to be like $100 for every, I don't know, 60 miles or something, is it? I don't know, it's crazy. Anyway, I have a tiny RV, it does about 26 to the gallon, so I'll keep that.
Yeah, well, that's better than a lot of cars, John.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's an old Toyota. It's really a four-cylinder, and it's geared well. It's like a U-Haul truck. It's got the big back axle with the dually, and it's geared really low. But it isn't fast, but it's really good on fuel, and it pulls like a horse. Not fast horse, but it pulls excellent. And it's
Johnny, we just lost our live stream, so we're on the end of the show. But
we want to thank you for ad-libbing so admirably. You did a great job.
Yeah.
You don't need to have anything in writing in front of you. You did a great job.
Yeah, I wish I could have got the name of that attorney. Aveo, I thought it was it, but I wouldn't try and guess. It doesn't matter. It's not. It's just the point that story about April Gallup. I think it was that story that crashed my computer. The minute I touched on that story.
Isn't that something, huh?
Mm-hmm. So I would not advise you to maybe go browsing it.
No, I don't think you've got to look at
that. Be careful. If it comes up, it may have an attachment that's got a virus that'll kill your computer. So.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you very much for being with us, and we'll talk to you soon. And thanks for doing such a fabulous job under stress.
Yeah, I'm very stressed, especially when the old backup. You get so used to this computer stuff. You know, that's the trouble. If I had a couple of books ready to go, it would be nice, or some notes. I had nothing. Just blank screen.
Oh, okay. Well, Johnny, next time we'll have a book or something.
Well, we're all electronically dependent, John, not just you.
Yeah, and like I said, it's a bad thing in a lot of ways.
It's okay.
The electricity goes down, that means we have nothing. Think about it.
Oh, well.
And not only that, you can't even, and even if it goes and they take these stories off, you don't have any proof that they were ever on, you know?
Yeah, well, that's why it's very important to print the stuff. I used to use the library at the computer, or the computer at the library all the time, print everything, all the important stories. And I'm really glad I did, because a lot of the stuff it's not that easy to find anymore. And a lot of the YouTube videos, like I said, are gone.
Yeah. So anyway, well, Johnny, we thank you for being on. And
we'll talk to you soon.
We'll talk to you very soon.
I look forward to it. So hopefully we'll do it again next week.
All right. We will. Okay. Good night, John.
Good night. Good night, Lila. Thank you.
That was John Brennan talking to us about his crashed computer, but he did an admirable job,
yeah,
I think
so.
Yeah, telling us about the things that he had looked up and read. So thanks for being with us this week, folks, and we'll talk to you real soon.
All right.
I think we have some music to play to say goodbye.
Yeah. But I wanted to play our new song.
Leo has a new one.
Barnstormer.